Well, hello. My name is John Tidwell. I am the State Director of Americans for Prosperity here in Oklahoma.
And I'm Joey Magana, and I'm the Deputy Director.
As many of you may know, we were fortunate enough to host a town hall meeting in Kingfisher, Oklahoma, late last week featuring Governor Kevin Stitt. We had a great crowd. I think that folks really enjoyed the conversation for sure.
And the food.
And the food as well, yes. Yeah, Snyder's catered it.
Can't go wrong with fried chicken.
No, it was very good. It was very, very good. So we have the audio from our town hall meeting that we would like to present for everyone and give you all an opportunity to hear some of the questions and hear directly from the governor. Before we get to that, Joey, anything that stood out to you, points that you keyed on from the governor in his remarks?
Yeah, I think two things. One, his telling the story of talking about the state parks and how you could only use cash.
Yes, certainly.
And transferring that system to now you can use your credit card. And just him asking those questions about, well, why not? Which I think he's obviously good to ask those questions because he's never been in government before.
Absolutely. A lot of why not questions coming from his office, which I think is very refreshing to see that.
Absolutely. And then the second thing was criminal justice reform, which has obviously been a hot topic as of late. He didn't talk about it too much during the campaign, but obviously seems to be a priority to him now, which is good because we're number one in incarceration.
So yeah, that was a hot topic this week as well at the Capitol. So certainly playing off of that momentum, I think, from the recent discussions. So without any further delay, we'll present the audio from our town hall meeting last week in Kingfisher, our Reform Oklahoma town hall, featuring Governor Kevin Stitt.
Enjoy.
Oh, thank you guys. So, hey, what's up, Jack? Thanks so much, guys, for having me here. Such an honor to be here. We just ran in from Enid, and I had a privilege, the privilege of taking a ride in a T-38. Wow. So that was really, really cool. Tour Advance, except for the fact, y'all know they make you put on a G suit? Y'all know what that is? So I took 5 G's, and I feel like I've just been beat up in the gut. Don't tell anybody, but I actually threw up in the back of the airplane.
Did they make
you eat first? No. Luckily, don't tell my 16-year-old son. He'll be making fun of me. The guy that was flying me, he said, "That'll be our little secret, sir." But I'll just make a couple quick comments, and then I think we're going to do a Q&A. It is such an honor for me to be your 28th governor. I keep pinching myself because, just like a lot of you, I've been in the private sector my whole career. This is my first elected office, and it's such an honor to be elected and serve as your governor. And the first thing I did when I got there was really just try to change the culture and bring kind of my vision and leadership style, like what Representative Sanders was saying, and just try to bring people together, tour agencies, go meet my employees. And what's amazing to me is I started touring these different agencies. When everywhere I went, it was like the first time they'd ever seen a governor there. Like, literally, I went across the street and visited the Department of Education, and they had to go back in the history book, and education is pretty important in our state, don't you think? And they went back in the history books and they said, well, the governor came here in 1991 and held a press conference. Before that, it was 1974. And that's when they dedicated the building, and nobody walked the halls like you did, sir. So I just went by and I was meeting the employees and shaking hands. My normal saying is, hey, I'm your new coworker. My name is Kevin. I started about a month ago. And one lady was so sharp. She was like, well, if you're my new coworker, you take this cubicle, I'm going to take the one by the window. But it's been fun. We've really changed the culture, and Representative Hager's here, and I think Senator Yeck, where's he at? Somewhere in here. And we've got Pac-Man here in the back. The reason I call him Pac-Man is he wore a Pac-Man jacket, all right, to the governor's breakfast whenever I had him over, so it's great. But it's been fun getting to know everybody and kind of changing the culture. And my couple priorities, number one was to get the accountability and the structure right in state government to make sure that I could run these state agencies. Because to me, running state government was about making sure that we get the dollars into our roads and bridges, into our healthcare system, into our education system. And when I got there, I realized that the governor couldn't make really decisions on how we were operating the different agencies. And really, it is a big business. It is about an $18 billion enterprise that we are spending in taxpayer money and federal dollars across about 120 different agencies, but the governor didn't have the authority to manage them, okay? They were managed by different boards and kind of commissions. And so the example I like to give, let's say we were all the folks in charge of hiring the next football coach at the University of Oklahoma, okay? And we hired the coach and we said, hey, congratulations, you're going to be the new head football coach. We want you to go win a national championship, win 13 games. But there's one caveat. You can't choose your own offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, or special teams coach. That'd be kind of hard, right? There's one other obstacle. They don't report to you either. They report to separate boards or commissions. So there's no way to get momentum and actually move down the field together. And so I told the legislature, it's what I campaigned on, and they agreed with me. I'm so excited. Early March, we signed that into law that the top five agencies now have to answer to the governor, the cabinet, the executive branch. So the legislature passes the laws, then the executive branch actually implements and makes sure that we're delivering services. So excited that happened. We're working on the budget right now. We're so fortunate to have more revenue this year, but we've got to make sure we save money because we do not have the savings account we need in our state right now, so I'm asking the legislature to definitely set aside $200 million in savings. And my goal at the end of 4 years is to have $2 billion in savings. $2 billion in savings will allow Oklahoma to weather another downturn where we won't have to cut core services. It's so important for our state. $2 billion is not very much when you think about the size of our overall budget. We spend about $18.9 billion. Having $4 billion is not a big deal. Compare that to other states. North Dakota, for example, has $5.8 billion in their savings account. Their total budget for their state is only $4 billion. Y'all see the math difference there? They have over 1 year's worth of savings set aside. When I got into office, we had $422 million in savings. For nobody would operate their budget that way. So that's why I'm really trying to hold the line. I don't want to spend all $600 million this year just because we have additional revenue. We've got to set that aside. So, and then education, we're asking for another pay raise for teachers because, to me, we've got to make sure that we value the educators. And matter of fact, I've got Hernandez, yes, Estella's in the room. So she's our new board member at the State Department of Education. Why don't you wave at everybody? We're so excited to have her. So we're, because really the magic happens. I've got it between teachers and students in the classroom. So I want to make sure that we value teachers, we value that profession, and we get those, get the best and brightest into the classrooms to teach our young people, because we've got to get them ready for the workforce. So Common Ed, Career Techs, and Higher Ed is so important that we get all those three working together. So let me just stop right there for a second, and we'll open it up to some questions. Absolutely.
Here, have a seat. We'll. So you're by our math estimate, you're 103 days in. What's been at this point? What's been the biggest surprise to you? That it's not really even a policy question, but just the logistics of your job and the way you're working through the building. What's been the biggest surprise to you?
You know, the biggest surprise is how much fun I'm having, and it's you know, when I first got there, it's so much better than campaigning, by the way. It, you know, just getting a chance to fly in a T-38 to meet you when I go around the Capitol to take pictures and make people's day, meeting the Girl Scout groups that are traveling there, and you realize that not everybody gets to meet the governor, and so it's just such an honor for me to make people's day. So the fun part of it is just exciting and just kind of setting a new hope and a vision. My vision is for us to be a top 10 state. So bringing hope and a new perspective to Oklahomans, because I grew up in Oklahoma. I'm a fourth generation Oklahoman, and sometimes we think that maybe we're not as good, or as in other states, or we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, or we're not as big of a state. But I expect us to compete against other states. I expect us to win. I expect us to, you know, really get our economy growing, because we're not a small state. We're actually the 28th most populated state in the country. It's most people don't think that. We're right in the middle. We're the 19th largest state when you think of land area. So we're the 19th biggest. We've got more natural resources than any other state. We're number 5 in oil and gas, number 3 in oil production, 3 in gas production, 2 in wind energy production. So all the great things we have in our state, our people, we know that's our greatest asset. We have a port here, access to the ocean, the best location, centrally located. So I just have to tell that story and just motivate and get the right people to really start growing.
So you and I met more than 2 years ago. We have Governor Stitt and I have a mutual friend, Connie Pearson, who lives in Tulsa. Connie this was actually prior to when she went to go work for Kevin. And she said, I've got this guy I want you to meet, Kevin Stitt, and I think you really like him, and I think you could answer a couple of questions for him that I can't answer. So you and I met in your office for an hour-long meeting that took a little over 3 hours. And it was 3 hours of nothing but questions of me about state government, politics, campaigns, all kinds of stuff. So I'm really excited today to turn the tables and have an hour of questions of you, of how what your perception is of the job now. But, you know, when we first met, you talked about it and, of course, campaigned on Oklahoma becoming a top 10 state. From 2 years ago when we first met and when you first started campaigning, I'm certain that the goalposts have not moved, but those goalposts have to be more in focus for you today than they were then. What are you seeing that are the things that we can actually reach for that get to the top 10 as we start moving through these different categories?
Yeah, you know, the top 10 is very aspirational, and it's the CEO's job or it's the governor's job to set that big vision and to let everybody know, here's where we're headed. And it's contagious, because now all my cabinet secretaries have started talking about it. They're starting. I'm having them set their 4 years, their 1 year goals, quarterly goals. So like transportation, for example, you know, their goal is to be top 10 in bridge conditions. And there's going to be something released later on this summer that'll be really, really good on that one. Pavement conditions. The first person over public safety. It's an aspirational goal, but it really gives us clarity to where we want to try to go. You can look at other states. I don't believe we have any different issues than any other state does, and they can start competing and thinking about what other states are doing to move us up those levels. But I don't even remember what your question was really right now.
The goalposts. So those are clearer to you today.
They are. The more I get into it, you know, when I thought about putting my cabinet together, for example, and I touched on it briefly before, running state government is about running, getting your arms around these 120 agencies and delivering results for Oklahomans. And when I started studying how I was going to put my cabinet together, I only had 15 cabinet positions to choose from. That's constitutional. And I went back and I studied Henry Bellman's cabinet and studied Keating's and Fallon's and David Boren's and every governor I could find, their cabinet structure. And I noticed that not one governor had a chief operating officer. So that's a COO. So I needed somebody that really was really good at managing and operations, because there's 33,000 employees. And so I put a COO in place, and that's in my cabinet now. It's a guy named John Budd. And then there was not really a focus for digital transformation. And I think everybody here has an iPhone and expects technology. So I put a digital transformation secretary. So we can talk about digital transformation in a second. But so really it was about getting the right people. We can't do this by ourselves. You have to put the smartest people in the room with you. You've got to get the right talent around you. And I'm so fortunate to have really great people coming and working with me. I'm attracting a different type of person to state government than most people than have been in state government before. And then I'm turning them loose and I'm supporting them and putting the structure in place and letting them go meet with their agencies. Secretary Copeland over Commerce, he went and met. There's about 20 or 30 agencies that report to every single secretary, okay? And just the little things, my secretary's going and meeting with those agency heads. It was the first time they've all sat around the room and been together. It's just amazing that it's the first time the secretaries actually went and met with the different agency heads. So that when I say the goalpost, it is becoming clearer and clearer how to run state government after I've been in there for 100 days.
What's the reaction been from, not necessarily from the agency heads, because a lot of those are appointments that you've made and changes that you've made, but the rank and file, do you feel that they are more energetic and more excited about the opportunity to look into reforms and really kind of right the ship? As I mean, they're the ones who know how the agencies are run better than anybody.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing, I've been sent an email. So I've sent an email to all 33,000 employees, several emails now. One was just welcoming them when I first got there. But also then the next one was setting up a contest and saying, hey, I want to hear from you. You're closer to the front lines than I am, and you know how to deliver results. And I've had 25-year state employees come up to me and just say, thank you, Governor. I've never got an email from the governor before. I've got a lot of ideas, and I'm going to send them to you. And we've been categorizing them now. I think we're up to about 2,000 different emails and ideas that they're doing. And we're also, June 3rd, I'm holding the first ever kind of management day. So I'm getting all 120 agency heads in a room with me. And if they're over 500 employee agencies, they can bring two other people, kind of their lieutenants. And so it'll be about 250 folks in the room. And we're going to have a training day and a collaboration day. And then I'm bringing in speakers. When you're the governor, you get to ask anybody. I can bring like Bob Stoops in. I can bring people from the Thunder. You get to ask anybody, and they want to come serve their state. So it's really fun. So we're getting really smart people helping the agency heads think about how they can set up their cost structure, how to goal set, how to define the mission. I could talk forever. No. All right, I'll tell you a quick story.
Everybody loves a good story from the governor.
This is another great example of digital transformation. So my Secretary of Digital Transformation, when he first got there, I had him just start looking through the different state agencies. And we went over to Parks and Recreation, which is under tourism. And the person over tourism, we're trying to figure out, you know, how to bring technology to it. Well, we were shocked to find that you could not pay with a credit card when you went in and booked a campsite, booked any kind of lodge, anything around the state. You had to pay with cash. They didn't take credit cards. And it was just mind-boggling. There's a box at the campsites with cash, you know, where you put it in. And y'all might help me with this, but I'm not positive that all those dollars made it to the Treasury. And so 2 weeks ago, our guys rolled out, and so now we can take credit cards in our state parks. And it's a game changer. And so on and on and on, there's things like that. In the pardon and parole system, and in our we're number one in something. I think we should be number 50th at. And nothing is digitalized. The files are this thick. So there's no way to analyze data. There's no way to determine who is going back into prison. There's no way to figure out, you know, what type of sentencing makes sense, doesn't make sense, who's getting the jobs, what type of licensing reform we need to have. So we've got a whole effort to put all that stuff you know, basically into a format or an electronic format where you can search it and you can splice the data. So across all the different agencies, that's why I'm asking the legislature for about $10 million to put a grant. Now, maybe it's 20. I can't remember. Somewhere between 10 and 20. But putting a grant program together to make sure these agencies can go in and show us a return on investment if we give them a little money to bring their processes up to 21st century.
In your State of the State address, you used the line, making Oklahoma a customer-focused state government. And I think that that's stuck with us, certainly at AFP, and it's a line that we've used as a goal to really move more towards, you know, in your experience as a successful businessman, you know, you have a very unique position, like you said, bringing all those agency heads and your managers in for a training that they probably have never participated in anything like that before. It's obviously, it's a new concept to them. But I imagine that, you know, focusing on that bottom line and you looking at that bottom line like it's your bottom line, because in the end, you're the one who's responsible for the success or failure of how all of those things play out. And so really drilling that down to them and helping them understand how you're all working together, is that working well? Do you think that there are folks have come around to that idea better? Just from you know, folks who've been in government as long as they have.
You know, it's hard. You know, month 10, 11, and 12, we're not on a calendar year. We're on a fiscal year in the state government. So our fiscal year ends June 30th. And what you find is these agencies tend to 10, 11, and 12 to spend all the money, even if they have stuff left over. So they, you know, buy furniture, buy a new vehicle, do something, because they're incentivized to spend all the money by month 12 or they lose it, or it goes into this revolving fund. Well, the revolving fund is something inside the agency that the legislature tends to go grab money out of the revolving fund. And even this year, they're asking to come grab it. So that's one of the things I'm trying to put a stop to. I don't want to teach bad behavior. And if we grab that, then they're taught they better spend it all. So I'm trying to teach these agencies that, hey, if you're fiscally responsible, keep it there. We want to help you invest it. And so I'm trying to do that. The other thing is you've got to help them define success. You've got to help the agencies get back to the mission that the legislature told them they're supposed to do. So here's a great example. Department of Transportation. I went and toured that agency and met the employees, and it was great, and saw how they test concrete and asphalt and all that. Then they said, Governor, we want to show you our new project. So they take me outside, show me two brand new Dooley pickup chassis trucks with a look like an ambulance, a big box on the back with lights all over it and a light package, and it was painted GoDot on the side, G-O-D-O-T. And I said, what's this for? And they said, well, Governor, this is a motorist assist. We'll drive around the metro, and we fuel up people that run out of gas, and we air up their tires, we change their tires, and we tow them over the side. And so I went back to the office. I called the secretary of that agency. I said, you need to kill that program. And he was like, hem-hawed around, and I don't know, Governor, we really need this. And I said, listen, that does not – Oklahomans – want me to make sure we're top 10 in roads and bridges. We don't want to be top 10 in motorist assist. That competes with AAA, that competes with OHP, that are fixing flat tires. You got to stop that program. And he called me back and said, okay, I did it, sir, and thank you for telling me to do it, because they were fixing to buy three or four more trucks for Tulsa. And here's the deal. 20 years from now, that's a whole new state agency that gets spun out called Motorist Assist. And if they're in Tulsa and Oklahoma City, they're going to want new trucks in, you know, Enid and Lawton and everywhere else, right? And then the legislature is forced to fund it and fund it and fund it. And then they're on our so anyway, that's kind of how these things mission creep away from you over time. And you have to have the right structure to say, and the right accountability for somebody like that's elected to you that says, hey, we got to stop that program.
Yeah. So let's talk about taxpayer-funded lobbyists. So right a few days after you took office, you had signed an executive order asking agencies, or requiring agencies, actually, to report back to your office the legislative liaisons and lobbyists that they were employing or contracting with to lobby the legislature for more dollars for their agencies. How was that received by folks that are in those agencies? And do you have a progress report on how that's gone? What have you learned from that?
Yes, I love coming to Kingfisher because I'm not very popular right now with the lobbyist, okay? So basically what happened was we couldn't really even figure out how many agencies were hiring lobbyists, right? So basically what happened, folks, like the Department of Transportation or the Department of Education or the Department of Banking or the Department of whatever was hiring a third-party lobbyist, okay? So that's an independent third party to turn around and come back to the legislature and try to kill pieces of legislation that might affect that agency, to lobby for more money. We really need $100 million more for our agency. So it just didn't make sense to spend taxpayer dollars for a state agency to turn around and lobby themselves for more money. Yeah. Right?
Right.
So we basically said we want every agency to tell us what contracts they have, and you can't sign another contract. You have to go to your cabinet secretary to find it out. So we're trying to gather that information. We had about there's about 50 agencies that didn't comply with us in the first 60 days. I think they thought we were going to go away, but we've gone back and hammered them and resent them notices, and we're whittling that list down. And we just had a cabinet meeting yesterday, and when we get it down to about six, that's where I need your help. I'm going to come right back to Oklahomans and say there's six agencies still not listening to me on these compliance things. So, but that's got to stop. And then the other thing, in structure-wise, all these 120 agencies will come to the legislature and play these games. They'll ask for $100 million more when they know they really only need $20 million more. You really don't know. You want to give the agencies what they need, but you don't have any confidence that they really are asking for the correct thing. And I think the members in here would agree with me on that. So what needs to happen is it needs to be more from a cabinet position. So public safety secretary needs to look at his 20 agencies and come and say, hey, corrections needs a little bit more. We need a little bit less in pardon and parole. DPS needs this. And it's more of an effort together. Here's what public safety needs, and here's how we're going to use it. Here's the outcomes, and here's the consolidation between the two agencies we need to do. So those are the things we're working on for next year's budget.
One of the bills that's continuing to move through the legislature, there's actually this idea in a House version and a Senate version, but the Senate version being SB1, the Loft bill, which would basically create an agency that would be able to report to the legislature a more accurate picture of fiscal impact on things, be able to do some audits. What's your view of that issue and how that's working now, where that can go?
Yeah. I see it. The legislature was disappointed because, like, the Department of Health last year, y'all remember whenever they lost $30 million? Well, one of the first things I did was I found out that they really didn't lose the $30 million, and we've already requested it back. So we've already pulled that $30 million back into the general fund. So that was good, but the legislature felt kind of hands tied behind their back. So this agency comes to them and says, we need $30 million. They had no way to really check it out. So that's what they designed Loft for. So it's fine. It's a fine deal. Everything we set up new, I'm always a little bit hesitant. I want to sunset it. I want to think about how do we end that. I think it's going to be totally different with my structure on the accountability side. Yeah. So I don't think Loft is going to be needed like it would have been in the past, because the executive branch should be, going out and doing a better job with presenting the budget.
Okay, that's interesting. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion in the last several weeks on the opioid lawsuits and what the state of Oklahoma had, the lawsuits that the state had filed, and there was a settlement on one of those lawsuits that resulted in a great deal of money, as hundreds of millions of dollars that's coming back to the state. And I know there's been some discussion at the Capitol about the process that that went through, both for from the standpoint of the attorney's fees for that lawsuit and the settlement, but also that that money was going to go to a in a way bypass the legislature and it possibly bypassed your office specifically to see what's the best use of those monies moving forward. Do you see some sort of a change there or a way that that's addressed in the future?
Yeah. Did everybody follow his question? Everybody knows what he's talking about? Okay. Basically, a couple things on that. I was disappointed that the Attorney General kind of unilaterally made that decision by himself. Kind of, it felt like a little bit in the vacuum without, you know, coming to his client. His client is the legislature, the governor. So he was poorly executed, okay? I will say that. It was poorly executed, and I think he understands that now. And we'll do things differently. And I think the legislature we've all had conversations. That being said, I think it's a good settlement. And time will tell. We can always play Monday morning quarterback on him. But he was at a point where this Purdue Pharma is a company that is privately held. It's not a publicly traded company. Very closely held family out of Connecticut. They were threatening bankruptcy. They were starting to move assets around. And they were getting sued all over the place by 50 other states. And I think he did a really good job of settling that lawsuit because they did not want to set a precedent and settle with a state. He literally had them, they were going to send, you know, do I think $20 million. He had them at $20 million settlement. But instead, they came up with this idea that they could fund a national center for opioid research and treatment. So then they thought, oh, well, we'll look like the good guys if we fund this national center for opioid research and treatment. Well, it just so happened our pitch was, or his pitch was, it's located in Oklahoma. And it's part of Oklahoma State University. They had set this system up, this research center up, 5 or 6 years ago. And so we got them to be the good guys and fund $275 million research for this national center. So it's great for Oklahoma. And then the other best efforts, and part of that agreement was they're going to give a best efforts in any future settlement with other states to fund the National Center for Research. So there could be 49 other bites at the apple for Oklahoma. So I think it's a good settlement overall. The execution of it was very questionable, and the legislature had every right to be disappointed and upset with it. And so that's the kind of story there. And hopefully, and then and as far as the legal fees, I challenged him on that as well. It just seemed grossly overflated. And I was concerned about the legal fees as well. It wasn't a kind of an open, transparent bidding process.
Right.
It was kind of hand-picked. So that looks a little slimy. it looks, you know, very political, whatever you want to say. I am excited about the settlement.
Yeah, okay. So to stay on healthcare, obviously you made comments earlier this week On Good Friday, there was an initiative petition that was filed on pursuing Medicaid expansion, gathering signatures to send that to the ballot. You, this week, were very vocal in your concern and opposition to a plan like that. You know, from the standpoint of talking about options and what some of those reforms look like, you know, how do you go about putting a plan like that together, and how do you see that sort of playing out politically in the state the next several months?
Yeah, you know, I've told my Secretary of Health and Secretary of Science and Innovation, we've got to come up with a plan. The Republicans, we can't just say, don't vote for that, right? We can't just always be saying no, no, no. We've got to come up with a plan and say, this is the right way to approach healthcare in Oklahoma. So that's what we're working on behind the scenes. I'm trying to get that all done. My goal is to get that ready by August 31st so I can come back to Oklahomans and say, here's the plan. There's 49 other states that we can look at on their health outcomes, what's working, how their rural hospitals are working. You know, I'm very cautious. I understand why Medicaid expansion is good for some folks. It's great for providers, hospitals, that kind of stuff. But what does it do to taxpayers? And what is the unintended consequence that's going to hit our state, 5 years from now? So I'm also thinking about that in the back of my head and how we can, take care of the folks, because Medicaid already takes care of the blind, the disabled, the aged, and so they're wanting to move that and start taking care of folks that are everybody under, like, I think 100. Oh, and also takes care of the poor. And then the poor is classified as anybody, family of four under 25,000. If you are pregnant, then that goes, it's like 160% of that 25,000. So you already take care of a big population. There's 850,000 people on our rolls today. I've asked for an audit of those rolls to make sure that the right people are on there. I'm questioning that we have too many people abusing the system that shouldn't be on there. So I'm asking for that. And I'm studying what the right thing is so I can be out in front. And I'm not an expert. I've got to do a lot more research to figure it out. But there is a great solution for Oklahoma, and we'll be out there in front kind of telling Oklahomans, here's what we need to do versus just the straight-up Medicaid expansion, that there's a group that's trying to get that on a statewide ballot that I think would be bad that they would just force that down our throat. Yeah. We need to come up with a solution.
So one of the things that you mentioned specifically to rural hospitals, and I would argue that you are obviously the most successful businessman who's ever run for governor and served as governor of Oklahoma. You obviously have a very good sense of how to run a business the right way, and you've probably seen a lot of folks who run businesses the wrong way. Looking specifically talking about rural healthcare and in situations where you have healthcare facilities that maybe are not run in an efficient, reform-minded manner, what's the role of the governor do you see moving forward? If you're looking at a hospital like that and you know that they may either have an antiquated business model or you know there's options that are available to them but they're not interested, how do you marry that in your mind to fulfill the responsibility of the state and the budget, but at the same time saying you guys aren't spending the money the right way? How does that all square up, you think?
Man, that's a tough question.
I'm most excited about that question, so I'm glad I'm.
There's got to be personal responsibilities. You got to be free enterprise. The government's responsibility is not to prop up every single business, right? In the same sense, some of the rural healthcare concerns. Other states actually do higher reimbursement rates for our rural communities. So that's something that I'm looking at. The big hospitals in the metro don't want that, right? They want the reimbursement rates to be the same. But delivering care in the rural Oklahoma sometimes can be higher cost. And so that's something we should look at as a state. Getting, providers to rural Oklahoma is a priority of mine, with residency programs in rural areas that helps. The statistics, most kids stay within a 150-mile radius of where they do their residency, so having more of those rural residency programs is helpful as well. But really it comes down to personal responsibility. It comes down to primary care, getting folks preventative care. I'm also thinking about instead of fee for service, because right now our whole model is if you do a fees, it doesn't matter about the outcomes. It's just they pay every single time there's a service done, right? It's a fee for service versus other states are doing fees for outcomes. So there's a lot of things that we can look at. Again, I'm not an expert. I've got a really, really smart Secretary of Health, Harvard guy, a business guy, a person that understands looking at outcomes and what other states are doing, and he is coming back to me with a plan, A, B, or C, and so then I'm going to share that with Oklahomans.
Okay. I have one more question on the budget, and then I want to do a couple of things on criminal justice reform, and I know we're I want to be respectful of everybody's time today. So you specifically mentioned the having $200 million go into rainy day and this year and really planning out for that. Obviously, that's a really key, important point for you. And you talked about some of what the other states are. But how is that being received by the legislature? How can we help to see something like that move forward and really start to look ahead rather than saying, well, hey, we've got all this money, we might as well just spend it now because the sun's shining today, it'll probably shine tomorrow.
Well, Yeah, I mean, obviously, just me talking about it, you talking about it, you telling your representatives that, that savings is important to you is all things are going to work, are going to help. And I think we'll get there with the legislature. They have a there's a lot of pressure to fund certain things, and we're fortunate to have $600 million more in spending this year. We really are. But the other thing I try to tell everybody is, you know, this base appropriation, base expense level, we cannot raise that base expense level and continue to raise it. So next year, if we have the exact same revenues, oil and gas stays the same prices, production stays the same, tax revenue stays exactly the same, we're actually going to have about $400 million less in our general revenue. The reason that is, so everything flat, we actually are going to have $400 million less. That's because our five-year stabilization fund is actually going to finally hit. Okay, this is a good thing because what that said was we took a five-year average, and in oil and gas revenue we know kind of goes like this, and our states had these big swings. Well, this year, so in other words, if we have, let's say it's $1 billion in oil and tax revenue, they look at the five-year average, and you only take $600 million, let's say, and it goes into the general revenue to spend. The other $400 million goes to this five-year average. Well, it's bad next year if everything stays the same because we're going to have less to spend, right? But it's going to be fantastic the next year because let's say we only have $200 million. Then you're actually going to grab $400 million from that fund. And the other thing is when you have $1 billion this year, then that last year, the bad year 5 years ago, falls off and you have a new five-year average that's going to roll forward. You see what I'm saying? But some of the legislatures are telling me, well, Governor, don't worry about it. We'll just change the law and we won't put that in there. And I'm like, no, that's not good. Because this five-year average was put in place for a specific reason to smooth out our ups and downs, right? So just trying to get everybody to think farther than just one session,
right,
is so important for us to think through and make sure we don't cut core services in next year or the year after and go back through what happened for the last couple years in Oklahoma. So a little bit of discipline this year will pay dividends next year. They will really thank me next year.
I want to wrap up on and talk about criminal justice reform. It's obviously it's an issue that AFP that we have worked on quite a bit, and we've had great conversations with you and your office on it. And I know you have a vision for what criminal justice reform looks like this year and moving forward. Criminal justice reform, as you all know, it's a really unique issue because it's just as much a putting families and lives back together as it is keeping people safe, as it is a budget issue. And it's trying to marry all of those things at the same time and make all of that stuff work in a way that you're making smart decisions instead of just a knee-jerk reaction, as I think sometimes has happened in the past. So from your standpoint, I don't want you don't have to rank them as to which one is the most important, because I'm sure that the family side is a really top of mind for you. But, you know, there's a lot of options that are out there on the table. There's a lot of criminal justice reform bills that have been introduced and are moving through the process now. At the end of the day this year, at the end of, as we go into 2020, what do you want to see? What is your goalpost on criminal justice reform? What's that vision in your mind?
Yeah, so actually, this is a priority I have this year, and Sunday in the Daily Oklahoman, I have an op-ed coming out. And it's going to kind of outline my criminal justice priorities this year. But there's a couple things. Number one, everybody knows that. We're number one in incarceration rates per capita against any other state. So the things I think are going to move the needle, and my public safety secretary, our goal is to go from number one to number 20 at the end of my term in 4 years. So from number one to number 20 is our goal, okay? And then we're going to keep moving that down. Public safety has got to be at the forefront, so everything filters through public safety, making sure that we are not doing anything that's going to jeopardize public safety. But there's a couple things. Number one is DA funding reform. So district attorneys have a tough job, and I want to make sure that they have the tools that they need. But right now, 50% of their funding comes from fines, fees, and court costs. So in other words, they're incentivized, it feels like, they're incentivized to have heavy fines, fees, and court costs, which turn into a kind of a death spiral or debtor's prison that's problematic. So I want to change that. I want fines, fees, and court costs to go to the legislature, and then they appropriate the amount of money to the DA. So that's number one that I want to get done. Number two is diversion techniques, diversion money. So for the nonviolent drug offenders, I'm asking for $10 million to go to these pay for success programs, women in recovery, some of these programs out there. I toured Maple Bassett Female Correctional Center in Shawnee, Oklahoma, and we rolled out a new program there that trained computer programming skills to people in prison. So I want to get more of those type of skills in prison and also diversion techniques before they get there. And then Retro 780. What that means is a couple years ago, the Oklahoma people passed to make some felonies misdemeanors. So I want to look at that population. I think it's, about 800 people. 800 people that are currently in prison today that would be considered a misdemeanor if that same crime or, I guess, drug offense happened today. And so what I want to do is I don't want to retro and change the law because there's a lot of complications with changing the law, but I want to take those 800 people and run them through the pardon and parole system and get them out because they wouldn't be in prison today if it would happen today. So that's another thing that we're working on. Licensing reform, I think, is important that we look at helping folks have a nice step back into society as long as the crime doesn't affect the licensing that they're going for. Because it's really problematic for them a lot. In my business, it's so hard, or my old business, it's so hard to hire anybody that has a felony. So we want to kind of look at that. And then the whole parole system as a whole, I want to look at. I'm not going to put somebody back into prison, which happens today in certain cases, if they miss their parole or they don't meet with somebody when they were supposed to, or there's some minor violation. It's got to be for committing a new crime, something a little bit heavier to go back into prison. And then also, you know, when you really think about it, if they're working a job, I don't want them to have to take off necessarily and drive four or five counties over to go meet with a parole officer. Maybe we can do FaceTime. Maybe they can use their pay stub that shows they've worked 40 hours a week and their employer testifies. That's what we want them doing, right? My brother, he tells me all the time, he tries to help people employ folks that have been in prison. Then you got to let them off in the middle of the week to go meet with their parole officer. It's so problematic for employers, they find, like, forget it. It's too complicated. I'm not going to do it. So we've got to think through those things. Those are my main ones I want this year, and I think that'll help move the needle. And then what we're starting next year is a true sentencing reform, literally classifying A, B, and C. Texas went through this a few years ago, A, B, and C on the violent, you know, crimes, and then you can actually take the sentencing, what is a C sentence, what is a B, what is an A, then you can actually tie the parole system to it and the bonding system, so you can have tradition, you can have really bond reform, because, you know, I hear the stories, I'm in restaurants and people come up to me, let me tell you my story, Governor, and, you know, they were, you know, arrested, set in county jail for 4 months. And to them, the $1,000 was unbelievable. They couldn't get it. They couldn't make parole, right? Or bond. What is it called? Bond. They couldn't make bond. The $1,000, they couldn't come up with it, right? And they sat there for 4 months in prison waiting for their trial. And then if they get acquitted or nothing happens, well, we think, okay, no big deal. Well, it is a big deal. They lost their truck payment. They lost their job. Their truck got foreclosed on. They lost their marriage. There's all kinds of things. So that bonding deal needs to be back to these classifications. That's something also I'm working on, big picture, that we'll roll out for 2020 as well.
That's fantastic. You know, you mentioned Maple Bassett, and I'll leave you all with this thought, because we've talked about this specifically before. At Maple Bassett, there's a cosmetology program. Then there's women who come in and they volunteer to teach the cosmetology program. So they do hair braiding and all that sort of thing. And then when these women, the there's a waiting list to go through the program at Mabel Bassett. They go through the entire program, and when they're done with the program and graduate, they still have to pay $35 to take the test. Well, they're in prison. I mean, they're having to pay $35 to get a license that, I mean, it all ties in. It really all does work, it all circles itself. It's really amazing, and I'm really thrilled that you have taken this on and you're very passionate about it. We can very much see that, so I appreciate that. Well, thank you so much for this. This has been really great, and it's a great opportunity, and God bless you. It's a breath of fresh air, and I think, we're all really excited. So,
thank you.
Very good. Thanks.
Well, that was great. I think that everyone certainly enjoyed a lot of that discussion and sort of seeing what the reform side of things looks like for Governor Stitt, where some of those some of the things that are coming next. Joey, you are our chief lobbyist at the state capitol. You're there every single day. God bless you for doing that.
Yeah.
And what do you see in the next, looking into your crystal ball for the next, we're probably 28 days or so away from the end of the legislative session. What do you see as major points in the next few days?
Obviously, hammering out the budget. That's, I think, what they're working on 24/7 now. Those last minute adjustments, we'll call them. Everybody kind of wants their version put in, and so they're going to try to hammer those out.
Certainly.
But other than that, also criminal justice reform, as I mentioned before, he said it was a priority, as you all heard. He came out with a press release this week, kind of identifying what he wants to do. Isn't totally the same as kind of our coalition package that we've been working on, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. And so seeing what that end result looks like
definitely
will be key in the next coming days.
It will be a very busy few weeks coming up, and we certainly invite everyone to make sure you're obviously seeing this or hearing this audio either on our website or on Facebook. So make sure you liked our Facebook page. You can also sign up for some alerts from our office on our text thread. If you text AFPOK to 46262.
I'm glad you remembered that.
I did. I remember it well. And it's not even written on the inside of my hand. AFPOK and text that to 46262. So sign up for our alerts and get involved. This is the most important time of any legislative session, the last month of session, when basically all the pie is being baked, the oven is on, and they're getting ready to go. So make sure that you're engaged with your legislators, the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office, telling them what is most important to you and what you would really like to see, what those reforms are, and what that means to you. So we certainly encourage everyone to get engaged. And Joey, thank you so much for this. I think this is a great opportunity to hear from the governor.
Absolutely.
We will talk to you all soon. Thank you.